This is Corpse Run Radio.
We are the Forsaken. We are the Forsaken.
Hello and welcome. Today I want to talk about the Eastern Plaguelands, where I two shows ago originally wanted to talk about them, but because of the announcement of Legion, I put in a different segment. So as for the Eastern Plaguelands, they have been reworked in Cataclysm, as most zones have, much heavier than the Western Plaguelands. Almost the entire Scourge influence has been eradicated due to the Argent Crusade. They have erected their strongholds there in the form of the Five Towers and the Light's Hope Chapel that has been fortified and built into a stronghold with walls and all that good stuff. Where it earlier was just merely a chapel, now it's much more a real base. And it looks like fortified and military. So yeah, the largest city in the zone is Stratholme, although it lies in ruins and still does, and probably will for the entire game. I doubt that Blizzard will implement a rebuild of the city. It's the largest city in Lordaeron, the Kingdom of Lordaeron, which the Eastern and Western Plaguelands are part of. Other cities that are worth mentioning, or towns, are Darrowshire, Tyr's Hand, and Corrin's Crossing. Before Cataclysm revamp, we really had a big Scourge influence in Corrin's Crossing, and Darrowshire was a quote-unquote mini-hub for one of the most heart-wrenching stories in the game, in my opinion, which is the story about Pamela and her dolls. And her family. It still has been kept in the game to some extent, but the complexity of it is gone. As far as I can remember, the story of Pamela Redpath, that's her full name, started for once in Underhall, where you got a quest from Chromie to go see one of Pamela's family, and then eventually you would end up in Darrowshire, where the remainder of the quest line took place, and then you had to go to Light's Hope Chapel to turn in the last quest. And also, if you went to Light's Hope Chapel, you got another breadcrumb quest to go to Darrowshire. So there were multiple directions from which to get into the quest line revolving around Pamela. Again, as I said, it's a very sad story, but if you want to experience it now, you can do so by going to, I'm not sure which tower it is, one of the central towers, the one that is just north of Darrowshire, and then when you have quested through the first part of the zone and its caravan quest chain, which is another unique part of the zone that they implemented with Cataclysm, which I found really interesting. Although there are some that would say that its linearity is something that is bothersome and doesn't give you enough flexibility, but I really like the quest line in of itself because it's a very nice story and it encompasses almost the entire zone sooner or later, and you'll find out basically everything about the current version of the zone and what everything is, not in as great a detail as we had earlier, but still, that is probably why they cut down on the Pamela Redpath questline. Another way to partly experience and get a quote-unquote overview over what the questline and the story of Pamela Redpath is all about, you can go to YouTube and you can listen to a song that Cranius made. It is, the video is entitled Darrowshire Widescreen, and it deals with the story about Pamela. So if you want to get a quick overview, I would suggest that you go listen to that song. It's very, very well done. And in my opinion, yeah, it encompasses much of the feeling that is part of the quest and what makes that quest so sad. It's a very well done song, and I suggest that people go listen to it. I'm not sure if we can play it on the show, if Juno has the rights to play it. If so, I think she will. If not, you will have to go to listen to it yourself. We ask the people that do Warcraft parody and Warcraft original songs before we use their material. And again, I'm sure that if we have the permission, Juno will have added the song either at the end after my segment or before. And if not, we simply don't have the permission from Cranius to do so. To get back to the beginning of the zone, as I said, you will start questing in the zone by talking to Fiona at the border between Eastern and Western Plaguelands. And then over the course of the quest chain, you will find that the people that make up the caravan passengers will tell you the pieces of the story, and each passenger tells his or her part, and eventually you will end up with the final quest line, quest conclusion, almost at the end of the zone, which I really find nice. And I think that the caravan quest chain is one of the best quest chains that the game has to offer. The Eastern Plaguelands don't have any factional flight points. We only have neutral flight points. They are the following: Thondroril River, it's the first one when you enter the zone. And then we have the towers, which are Crown Guard Tower, East Wall Tower, Light's Shield Tower, North Pass Tower, and Plaguewood Tower. And finally, we have the most important general flight point, which is at Light's Hope Chapel. In addition to all those, we have the Death Knight Darting Zone exclusive flight point, which is Akiris, the Ebb and Hold flight point, which is only available after you complete questing in the Starting Zone for the DK. And only DKs are able to get that flight point. So although you can fly up to the Ebb and Hold as a non-DK, you will not be able to get the flight point there as a non-DK character. As for the DK Starting Zone, that is one of the special features, so to speak, of the zone. Another one is Tyr's Hand, has been named for the Keeper Tyr, one of the five Ulduar Keepers. Although we only see four Keepers present in Ulduar, he is still considered one of the five original Ulduar Keepers, which are being symbolized by the temples that you see around the immediate area of Ulduar in the Storm Peaks, where you will find all five Keepers represented by their individual temples if you fly around the zone of Storm Peaks. Tyr lost his hand in the events that are portrayed in Dawn of the Aspects, the novel by Richard A. Knack. And after he replaced his hand with a silver hand, this fact has been used in relation and in reference to the name for Tyr's Hand, as well as for the foundation name of the Order of the Silver Hand of the Paladins, which we are going to see more of during Legion, where apparently the players will be leaders of the Silver Hand Order, as they carry the Paladin's artifact weapon. But back to Tyr's Hand, the city. It was one of the larger settlements in Lordaeron, and it was a stronghold for the Scarlet Crusade with their High General Abendis. And again, only recently after Cataclysm revamp, the Scourge was finally defeated and driven out, so there isn't much left. The Scarlet Crusade turned into the Scarlet Onslaught, and they left for Northrend to fight the battle against the Scourge. Although, in my opinion, they weren't utilized very well, not at all even, because they were made into villains. They could have had a nice redemption story, in that we could have had them as part of the forces that go up against Arthas to at least see some sort of rectifying for their existence, since having them being villains even in the last part of the fight against Arthas was not all that good after we discovered that Mal'Ganis led them and he was discovered and chased away. In my opinion, there could have been a twist where the forces of the Scarlet Onslaught were incorporated into the fight against the Lich King, but again, that wasn't to be, so it's, in my opinion, another wasted chance for good storytelling. But yeah, that's just my thought about it. They could have made it better. They could have done a better job with them. Okay, I think I have been talking way too long now. The only thing I wanted to talk about before I close is Life's Hope Chapel and the role it is going to play, apparently, in Legion, which is going to increase the player value of the Eastern Plaguelands again, as much as it will the other zones, where we will get to have the class halls. In the Paladin's class case, they are going to be a room, let's put it as neutral as we know until now, underneath the Lighthope Chapel. And since this is neutral ground, there won't be any problems to have Horde and Alliance together. If they want to separate it, you can have a winged thing there, where one wing is for the Alliance and another wing is for the Horde. But I would still like to see that, if the chance exists lore-wise, and we still don't know if the chasm that they apparently want to have between Horde and Alliance, so they can reinvigorate the war in Warcraft, if that chasm is deep enough so we will not share a common neutral area, even with the class order halls. But then, as I said, we'll have to see. The winged thing, in my opinion, is a good idea to do it. Since the Lighthope Chapel is such an iconic place, it's perfect for the Paladin. I myself never played a Paladin, I probably never will, but again, that's another thing. So I hope that it has been informative for you, this little walk through the Eastern Plaguelands. And if you have questions or suggestions for me, you can tweet me at grandnegus1, you can write me an email, towerofcommerce@gmail.com, you can write into the show, corpserunradio@gmail.com, and you can find me Monday nights on the Pwncast Twitch stream channel. I'm not sure about the time that we start at the moment, since we are in flux there, but I think it should be something like 6:30, we change it to 6:30. To 9:30 p.m. on Monday nights, Pacific time. So come and join us. Myself, Lycan from Pwncast, and Seraphida from Dalaran Academy. This has been Grand Negus, Rule of Acquisition number 19. Satisfaction is not guaranteed. Bye, guys.
Hi, this is Stone.
Hi, this is Leda, and we're from the WoW Challenges podcast. We talk about all things WoW Challenges. Iron Man, Bloodthirsty, and Pacifist.
Come catch our first show live on Saturday, August the 29th at 7 p.m. Eastern at connectcast.tv/stone.
Hello everyone! I've finally been able to record the weekly garrison campaigns offered within Tanan Jungle, and the Guild from Ashes, from Silvermoon EU, they were kind enough to carry my butt through Hellfire Citadel and allow me to record the raid. This means that I'll be able to tell and show you the story of patch 6.2, Fury of Hellfire. This week, we'll talk about the storyline within Tanan Jungle, and then next week we'll actually go into Hellfire Citadel, we'll talk about the bosses, speculate a little bit about the future, we'll cover that one next week. Before we get to that part though, let's first take a quick look at what exactly brought us here, because it's been quite a few months since we talked about Warlords of Draenor, so sit back, let's recap, and I hope you'll enjoy. Patch 6.0 had us do the Garrison campaign, which eventually led to us kicking some serious Iron Horde butt. And at the end, we have a standoff with Gromash and the Iron Horde.
The Iron Horde is never beaten! I will never surrender! I will remember this day, heroes. I will remember your names and your faces. And when the time comes, I will carve you limb from limb if you dare challenge me. I will be waiting in Tanan Jungle. You will find only death beyond these gates.
Very well, Gromash. Then we will come for you.
Gromash challenges us to meet him within Tanan Jungle, but things didn't go so well for the Warchief of the Iron Horde. We took down Blackhand within the Blackrock Foundry, and many of the orcs, they started to doubt about their plans. They feared that following Gromash, it would not lead them to the promised conquest. The cunning Gul'dan saw this as a great opportunity, and he offered the Iron Horde the same blood as he offered them before, and this time, there was no Garrosh to stop them, and they were more willing to embrace their destiny.
Show your face here, Warlock.
You promised conquest, Gromash, yet brought these clans to ruin. Your men have died for nothing.
My soldiers died with honor.
Did they? And what about your son?
Garrosh, my son,
you have lost everything. There is only one choice. Drink and fulfill your destiny.
Your poison would damn us all!
Your iron will is legend. I will enjoy breaking you.
Who will be the first to accept this gift? Power such as mine for any willing to serve. Kilrog.
You have seen your fate. You know what must be done.
Kilrog!
Yes. I will build a new horde. I will forge you into an unstoppable weapon. You will be the scourge of 100 worlds. The might.
Kilrog Deadeye of the Bleeding Hollow Clan, he sacrificed one of his eyes to see the future, to see the moment of his demise. Apparently his visions, they showed him that Gromash would eventually fail, and that accepting Gul'dan's offer was the way to go. With Kilrog being the first, many of the Iron Horde, they switched sides and joined Gul'dan, but not all of them, and especially not Gromash and his iron will. Gul'dan, he will work on breaking that iron will with great pleasure, but first, Tanan Jungle, it doesn't look exactly like Gul'dan likes it, and it's time to redecorate.
You were to be the first, Hellscream. You were destined to be my greatest champion, and instead, you chose this. You have no vision. Behold, what a true seat of power demands. A citadel of hellish fire worthy of my masters. A monument to entomb the souls of all who would dare to defy us.
They will defy you. I have seen their forces in battle. They are fierce. fearless. It does not matter what vile creatures you summon to the battle. They will persevere. Their resolve is unbreaking. They will come. They will fight. And they will wash their blades of your blood in victory.
Fight if you must, Hellscream. It is no matter. In the end, we all serve the Legion.
And this brings us to the story of patch 6.2. Now King Varian Wrynn and Warchief Vol'jin, they've both found a way to Draenor, and they're making their plans to assault Tanaan. The Iron Horde, they've regrouped, they've fortified their gates, so just assaulting them head on, that would be very unwise. The sea lanes, they're open, they're a great opportunity to attack from both land and sea, so this way we're gonna spread the Iron Horde's forces, we're gonna keep them occupied, and we're going to establish a foothold within Tanaan jungle.
Serve everything rests upon your shoulders, Commander. Build us a navy so we can assault Gul'dan from all sides. Good luck.
We'll need equipment, we'll need resources, and we need a specialist to build up our shipyards. At the Iron Dock, we're informed that several orcs have spoken out against Gul'dan since he assumed control, and one of them is an engineering prodigy, Solak Rourke. This orc is exactly what we need, since he's the one that designed the Iron Docks to begin with, and he's probably ready to defect. They're about to send him away on a prisoner's train though, so time's of the essence. We break him out of the prison, we recruit him into our ranks, and we get ready to build our shipyards.
We seek Solak Rourke!
You found him! If you wish me dead, put a hammer in my hands, and let's make a fight of it!
We don't want you dead. We need a shipwright.
Ha! There's none better.
Rourke is ready to join us, but in order to do the job, he'll need his blueprints, which you collect from the dead body of his replacement, Eprolnar. And with that done, Rourke shows up at the garrison, and he builds us a shipyard.
Here! This is a perfect natural harbor.
Commander, you have brought the might of the Alliance to the seas of Draenor. The way lies open for our invasion of Tanaan.
Now, having a shipyard is great, of course, but in order to get to Tanaan, we'll have to build a ship that will be able to transport us there. Luckily for us, Rourke was able to bring some of his finest blueprints with him, and after a few minutes of hard work, our first ship is ready to go.
Our transport is ready. The invasion of Tanaan can begin. Ural, are your people prepared?
Yes. The Draenei will lead an assault on the main gates while your navy circles around to the rear.
Godspeed, Commander.
This is our moment. Our Dawnsha.
After so many months, we end up right where we left Tanaan Jungle behind, the place where we had to run for our lives. So many things happened in between, and now the roles are quite reversed. We no longer run for our lives. This time we've come to kick the Iron Horde's butt once and for all. We scout the area to see what's exactly going on, and we find out that members of the Bleeding Hollow clan, they've been sent by Kilrock to collect armor, to collect weapons, while the Dark Portal is being guarded by Gul'dan's cultists, and it still has some power left. Up ahead is a gauntlet, where the Iron Horde has made its stand. We go through the gauntlet, we take care of one single fell cannon, and with that, the way is clear to build our outpost. That was the easy part though, because now before us waits the daunting task of having to clear Tanaan Jungle and assault Hellfire Citadel. First order of business, we move to the west, where our forces have encountered the brunt of Gul'dan's forces, and they are in dire need of some help. Upon arriving, we're informed of the situation, and we're asked to seek out scouts to gather some intel in Tanaan Jungle, and what exactly is going on. This questline is to inform us about the upcoming daily Apexis quest, the seven main targets that we're going to focus on within Tanaan Jungle. You have the Iron Front, and this is the first location that we were sent to. That's the area to the west, where we help our troops who have assaulted the gates from Tanaan. At the Iron Harbor, harbor, we have troops from Draenor that come in to be converted by Gul'dan, while some of the orcs, they stay, they bring munitions, other resources to feed their army. The Fellforge is the location where they build their tanks, their cannons, their infantry weapons, and they're infused with Fel energy, while the Ruins of Kranach is an area with Arakoa that have been recruited by Gul'dan. These Arakoa are being trained by the Shadow Council in the ways of Fel magic and demon summoning. The Temple of Shannar, a village that was destroyed some time ago, is now replaced with a training grounds with demon summoning and corrupting the wildlife into fell weapons. Zevgol, home to the Bleeding Hollow orcs, these are the orcs that have lived within the jungle for quite some time, so they're very familiar with the area. They practice dark blood magic, they're relentlessly pursuing our scouts, they're disrupting our operations, and they're gathering more power for Gul'dan's magic. Finally, there's the Throne of Kil'jaeden. This is the area where Gul'dan offered the orcs the demon blood for the very first time. Now the air has been turned in a burning legion paradise. You got giant demons that are being summoned, infernals raining down, and then there are the cultists who are continuing the flow of corrupted water. A direct transportation to the Throne of Kil'jaeden is required, but to get this, we'll first have to place a few beacons at the throne, and there we find out that an old enemy has returned. Now known as the Supreme Lord Kazik, he is emerged from the Twisting Nether once again, he's watching over Gul'dan's efforts on behalf of the Burning Legion. In our reality, we also have Lord Kazik, and he was responsible for reopening the Dark Portal and starting off the Burning Crusade expansion. This achievement of finding a relic of the past, which allowed him to open up the Dark Portal, this has earned him the title of Lord Kazik, and during Burning Crusade, he was also a world boss found at the Throne of Kil'jaeden.
I remember well the sting of defeat at the conclusion of the Third War. I've waited far too long for my revenge.
We now know that the Twisted Nether, it transcends all realities, but it's uncertain which demons have their souls anchored to the Nether and which don't, so it's uncertain if this is our Kazik or the one of 30 years ago. Considering that they gave him a shiny new title, I'd personally say that this is our Kazik, but it's entirely uncertain. So those are the areas that we assault within Tanan Jungle, but there are more missions going on. For example, you have Zatenga the Walker, who's a troll that doesn't really have a backstory. All he wants is for us to take care of the Saberon within Fangrela to show who's boss and earn the respect of all creatures in the jungle. Like I said, there isn't really a story there besides earning reputation and getting the rewards, and even the background for the Saberon, it never really fleshed out. You also have the Order of the Awakened. They've shown up to aid in the battle against Gul'dan. This order is a combination of both corrupted and uncorrupted Arakoa who came together after the events within Skyreach. They're working on creating a brighter future for their people with the aid of the Apexus crystals, but Gul'dan has twisted and turned the powers within the crystals and he corrupted them with fel magic. On top of that, he has also lured Arakoa into his ranks with the promise of returning to the sky, of healing their wings, so the Order, they want us to help them by bringing them corrupted Apexus crystals. Finally, there are the small weekly garrison campaigns that popped up, and they were used to introduce us or give a little bit of background to the bosses within Hellfire Citadel, as well as showing what exactly Gul'dan is looking for. Right from the start, we encounter Goy Orsh, which is an orc that's been saved by one of our scouts, and he tells us that the Fel Orcs, they've been torturing members of his order, the Guardians of the Vault, and they're trying to get information, rip secrets from their flesh, and Goy Orsh fears that one of them might have actually talked before their demise, so he asked of us to meet with his leader Lagar and tell him that Gul'dan knows. Lagar thanks us for bringing him this information and he fears that an ancient secret has been revealed to the worst person possible. We now know that Gul'dan is looking for something and whatever it might be, it can't be good for us, but for now the details, they're being kept a secret. The next questline, it sends us into the Bleeding Hollow hunting grounds, where our scouts have found out that somebody else also has a vendetta against the Bleeding Hollow, and he's been hunting them. The enemy of our enemy is our friend, so we're sent to find this killer, and it turns out that it's actually Ariok, son of Itric, the same Ariok that sacrificed himself during the Tanan introduction and allowed us to escape.
I know what I must do. Blood and honor! Go find Khadgar.
Jumping into the blood ritual, it has given Ariok incredible strength, which allowed him to actually survive this encounter, but it also lowered his intelligence and he's losing himself. He has not forgotten who's responsible for his transformation, and he's desperately searching for Kilrock Deadeye. Together, we enter the caves, where generations of chieftains, they've sacrificed one of their eyes to get a glimpse of the future, to see their own demise, and see how they should rule the clan. At first, the chieftains of the past, they stood at Kilrock's side, since Gromash, he was definitely worthy of the Iron Horde, but they sense that Gul'dan, he will only bring them ruin. We're sent to find Kilrock's sacrificed eye, and with it, we get a glimpse into Gul'dan's plans.
They are raiding Zethgol! We need to pull back and defend my home or else we- Patience, Kilrock. Your warriors must continue to seek the cipher. But once the cipher is mine, our enemies will have no safe ground. Wait. Do you feel it? We are being watched. Hold still. Your sacred grounds are defiled, Kilrock. Do not worry. I have taken care of the problem.
Gul'dan has Kilrock's warriors searching for a cipher, which is actually the Cipher of Damnation. In our reality, Gul'dan also used the Cipher of Damnation, and he used it to sever the last remaining ties the orcs had with the elements of Draenor. Unleashing this spell caused great devastation to the land. The volcano that you can find in Shadowmoon Valley, it stands as a reminder of what happened that day. We cannot allow Gul'dan to get his hands on the cipher to follow through with his plans, so we must keep pursuing him, while Arioch, he just got one goal in his mind.
Kilrock, at the Citadel, I must kill him before I lose everything.
Now the Bleeding Hollow Orcs, they're not the only ones put on the task of finding the Cipher, and this is explained within the next garrison campaign. The Arakoa Rashad shows up in need of help, since Iskar has gone missing. He has reason to believe that Iskar has followed the remnants of the Sefik, who have been gathering here at Tanan, who have joined Team Gul'dan, and he wants us to help him investigate. First we clear the area of some orcs that are trying to spy from the shadows, and after that we follow Rashad, and we find out what happened to Iskar.
Interesting. Come to Tanan, assist me, and I will return you to the skies. Who wrote this message?
Come, let's continue this search.
A shrine to Terak. The Sethic revere the Talon King. Why would they deface their own shrine? We must continue to investigate. This is written in the language of the Apexis. Buried. Evil. Forbidden. Without the other half of this fragment, this is all I can discern. We must carry on. What's this? This book looks familiar.
The final clue that we find is Iskar's Tome of Shadows, which he used to carry with him, and on the last page is a journal which says the following. I continue the search for a cure to the curse of Sepha. If the rock was restored, I would not be in this situation. Damn, Rashad. I was contacted by an orc that identified himself as Gul'dan. He has a cure for the curse. I must travel to Tanan to search for the location of this cipher of his. I've already covered Iskar's short story in a different video, but basically, he never got over the fact that he was turned into a corrupted Arakoa and that his ability to fly in the sky was taken away from him, so he kept searching for a cure. With the questline, in Spies of Arrak, he wanted Terak, the Talon King, to be restored to power, but Rashad feared that the Talon King had lost his mind and was too far gone. Instead, we were the ones chosen to receive the Talon King's power, and now Gul'dan has offered Iskar exactly what he was looking for. With a little bit of enchanted dust, we used the Tome of Shadows to find out what exactly occurred when it was lost in Iskar's hands.
Farewell, my friend. Let's see what we can discover. Oh, and keep your guard. This might draw some attention our way.
Your Bleeding Hollow dogs have failed, Gul'dan. They are as inept as ever.
Arrogance will not be tolerated, Iskar. What of your search for the cipher? Or are you too a failure?
In the ruins, I found mention of a dark power hidden within the earth. This fragment will show you the path to where it is sealed.
You have done well, Iskar. Success will be rewarded. Drink, and you will fly once more. Go, prepare an army of your kind. They too will serve the Legion.
I've seen enough. Iskar is lost to us. He has traded one curse for another.
Iskar was more successful than the Bleeding Hollow Orcs, and he gives Gul'dan an artifact which will lead him to the Cypher. In exchange, Gul'dan gives Iskar the gift of the Legion, exchanging one curse for another, but also gaining a whole bunch of power, and most importantly, regaining his ability to fly. Rashad has seen enough, and he trusts that when the time comes, we will do what needs to be done. There is one more campaign that we can talk about before the grand conclusion of this storyline, but this campaign is a little bit disconnected, but it does connect to Hellfire Citadel. The Akunai have been reporting for some time that something was wrong within Akkadun ever since Terrancor's assault. This was part of the leveling experience within Talador, for those that don't remember. We had the Shadow Council and the Legion, they were trying to invade Akkadun, the Draenei they were betrayed from within, and we went in to take care of business. At the end of the dungeon, we faced off against Terrancor, who was already feasting on a few delicious souls, but before we could finish him off, before we could finish the job, he jumped off the platform claiming that he needed more.
More! I need more!
Now suddenly a hole has blown open from one of the underhalls, so we're sent to investigate and we discover the secrets of the Sargeri. Down below, we disable the fell soul drainers and we discover that Terrancor, he was not so easily vanquished.
They are here, Terrancor! We must leave!
No! So many souls! Such power!
Terrancor, or Gorfiend as he's now called, he's been feasting on souls for months and it has utterly destroyed his figure, turning him into a beautiful, beautiful fat boss. Where in our reality, he became the first of the Death Knights created by Gul'dan, in this reality, fate had other plans in mind. Tyrant Velhari and the Sargeri, they're working on bringing Gorfiend to the Citadel, and unfortunately, that's pretty much all that happens here.
Cease your desecration of my ancestors!
I will return once Gul'dan has annihilated you!
Which brings us to the final campaign in our pursuit of Gul'dan. At our garrison, we're informed that one of Gul'dan's warlocks, he simply walked up to the garrison and he surrendered. Oronok Thornheart has information for us, since he knows what Gul'dan intends to do. He knows that Gul'dan wants to use the Cypher of Damnation to corrupt the very elements of Draenor. Gul'dan will scorch the whole of this jungle in Hellfire, and he asks of us to quickly go, protect the Guardian Shamans and the Vault of Earth. You can also find Oronok in our reality, where he tells us the tale about being lieutenant to Gul'dan during the days that Gul'dan used the Cypher to sever their connection to the elements. In Outland, we gathered the Cypher for Oronok to make sure that it remained out of Illidan's hands, that they couldn't use it against us, but unfortunately, there was another that knew about it, namely Kilfa Sunstrider. That's just a little bit of a side story. If you want to check it out, it's still in the Burning Crusade, Shadowmoon Valley, it's still available. Now, in this reality, it seems like Oronok, he cannot stand by and let Gul'dan carry on with his mad plan, so he switches sides and he seeks help. At the Vault, we find out that the warning has come too late. Gul'dan has already taken out those charged with guarding the Vault, and he has claimed what he was searching for.
At last, with this I will scorch the land with hellfire. The very elements will tremble before me. You are too late, hero. The Cypher is mine. Your armies will burn.
Gul'dan is ready for his ritual of using the Cypher combined with his fell magic to corrupt an elemental lord and use it to sunder the elemental link to the land. This will cause a massive upheaval across all of Draenor, so we have to stop him. The ritual is taking place behind a magical wall created by Oronok himself, but he promises that he will lower it and he gives us the chance to stop Gul'dan.
Prepare yourself. Gul'dan is at his most powerful. In the name of the Prophet... In the name of the light, this place shall be cleansed. There! Go! Stop, Gul'dan!
Siruk, you serve no shaman now. Sever your link to them. Ravage this land. I enjoy watching you squirm. You make a fitting sacrifice. Siruk, what are you doing? Only flesh and blood oppose you. Impossible. This means nothing. One way or another, this world will burn.
Despite getting the cipher, Gul'dan's plans failed and we take out the Elemental Lords. You have to wonder why Gul'dan, in that moment, he didn't just jump down and took care of us himself. It's possible, of course, you got Ural there, and I assume for the Horde you got Lady Liadrin, or maybe somebody else. You got us, and you got Ornok, but still, if Gul'dan is truly that powerful, why didn't he take care of the heroes right there? I suppose that the easiest explanation would be that if he killed us there, it would prevent us from experiencing the next part in the storyline, which is assaulting Hellfire Citadel itself. Ornok, after all of this, he decides to join us to serve us as a follower in our garrison, and the campaign Frutanan is going well. One fortified citadel awaits, the location where Gul'dan plans to summon the one that will take care of us all, the one that last time we faced him, it took the immortality of the Night Elves to take him out. That, however, is a story that I'll save for next week, where we're going to talk about the bosses within the raid, we're going to talk about the conclusion of the storyline, and maybe even speculate on what the future might bring. For now, everyone, thank you very much for watching. I really hope you enjoyed the story so far. Subscribe if you like my videos, and until next time, guys. See ya!